Hello, everybody. Charisse here with a very special announcement. I am thrilled to share that RCAT is now an official AIA continuing education provider. With this remarkable distinction, RCAT has launched RCATemy, a continuing education platform for the busy AEC professional. And here's the really exciting part. You can now earn continuing education credits by doing exactly what you are doing right now. That's right, you can now earn AIA credits by listening to select episodes of Detail. Whether you're working around the house, on your commute, or stuck in a waiting room, just listen, take a brief quiz, and your credit will automatically be recorded with AIA. It's really that simple. Plus, bonus points that much of our content qualifies for that elusive HSW credit. And we all know how valuable those are. What more could you ask for? We aim to please. Find out more at rcat.com/continuing-education or follow the link in our show notes. And thank you for tuning in to the RCAT Detailed podcast. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
We can come up with creative solutions and still be flexible and easier to work with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not combative with our builders. Definitely. And they really are our bullpen, our team that is making it happen.
Yeah, we're not going to live or die over a certain detail necessarily.
And right.
Everyone has kind of a limit, but we really want to be flexible and collaborative to make the project the best it can be, rather than us dictating you must do something this way when we might not be the ones to do that.
And maybe that it is the right way to do it, but at least we've talked through, okay,
right,
this is their side,
exactly,
of it, this is what we see, and usually we can find the right answer that way.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, senior specification writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My returning guests today are John Gentry, AIA partner and co-founder, and Amy O'Carroll, ARB partner and co-founder of GoSee in Seattle, Washington, and that's GOC. John co-founded GoSee with Amy in 2012 after 9 years as a project architect in Seattle, working with several acclaimed firms. Growing up in rural North Carolina, he developed a deep appreciation for the landscape and a passion for creating structures that thoughtfully respond to their site and express their pragmatic functions. He believes architecture, when rooted in a hands-on, passionate process, has the power to elevate everyday experiences. Amy, born and educated in the United Kingdom at the University of Cambridge and the Architectural Association, moved to Seattle to pursue architectural practice with John after working together transatlantically on several successful design competitions. Amy is passionate about design as a collaborative process and enjoys finding opportunities in this process that blur the conventional perceptions of what we understand as architecture. GoSee has been widely published and recently awarded AIA Emerging Firm of the Year in the Northwest and Pacific region. The project we're talking about today is the really cool new Alton Wines Tasting Room and Wine Garden in Walla Walla, Washington. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. Just beyond Walla Walla, nestled into a natural hollow shaped by surrounding vineyards and rolling hills, Alton Wines finds its place in the land rather than on it. The beginnings of this project began with a chance appreciation by the client of Gosi's previous work on another winery.
It was an interesting kind of start to the project. These clients, a couple, Seattle-based couple, they had actually been to one of our other wineries, Core Cellars, down the Columbia River Gorge. And they had, I guess, at some point previously decided that they wanted to sort of pivot their lives and go into the wine industry, and were beginning that process by going to wine school whilst they were working their regular day jobs. And they visited our winery and I think just like loved the experience of being there, sort of a very relaxed atmosphere, very welcoming, and asked the owners who the architect was. And they got our name and came and met with us up in Seattle, and we hit it off. And it was just sort of one of those processes where we're working with them as they build their business and their brand. It was a really kind of exciting opportunity. And going out to the site with them to sort of see this area where they decided that the project was likely going to be. But they were really hoping to achieve that sort of similar atmosphere. I think in Walla Walla previously, it's kind of changed a bit now, but previously it was a bit more stuffy, I think, in the wine tasting world. Sort of you go in, you sit at the bar, you have your tasting, you leave, you get your bus, whatever, move on to the next spot. And they wanted to embrace a more kind of casual, relaxed feeling where you're invited to linger, to stay, to have events that complement wine tasting, whether that's dinners, kind of invited chefs. So just like a different way of looking at wine tasting than maybe Walla Walla had seen before. And I think they were excited to see what we could do with them to create a space to accommodate all those different types of activities.
It's interesting to be in that role where, I mean, they were certainly managing the business planning of it, but we were kind of doing it alongside them in a way. We introduced, actually, one of the first things we did at our first meeting, we introduced them to a company called Shore. They're a graphic design, web design company, and they ended up building the entire brand for the bottling, the logo, the naming, a lot of the language. And having worked with Shore on other projects previously, we were kind of able to create some of that with them and know that the building was going to kind of align with that building of the business and brand together. So yeah, we were in the same building at the time.
We know them really well, I'm friends with them, and we're like, hey, you guys should meet.
They may even have hired Shore before us.
This is the beginning.
But we found ourselves in that kind of role of like, sort of creating this business alongside. I think it's a good lesson for young architects and students too, is like, pay attention to graphic designers and what they're up to. You know, you're kind of maybe not going to be doing that work, but like, you're going to be creating kind of architecture alongside it sometimes. It's a good opportunity when you do get that chance to kind of build a new business kind of around those ideas. So it was, and Shore do amazing work too. So if you go to the Alton Wines website, you'll see beautiful photography, beautiful graphics, and you know, the logo and bottling and everything. So it really makes the whole package.
The site, once dismissed as unsuitable for farming, offered a unique chance to create something that embraced its setting rather than altered it.
Sort of a unique spot. There's a huge sort of series of waves of landform. They actually have vineyards above, coincidentally, which is nice for us. And then farmland, kind of more, I guess, arable farmland below.
Pocket that we're referring to is that kind of change in topography. It's sort of flat, but the vineyards are surrounding that
then,
portion.
Yeah, these waves kind of continue in various sizes. But I think the issue for the farmer was that his, you know, big, I don't know what they call it, you probably know, John, the crop equipment, the radius of those machines that kind of roll through the fields, couldn't really access this spot efficiently. So it was never really used, sort of a cutoff line in front of it. And he was kind of an interesting guy. We met with him, we went out there, and he'd been sort of actively looking for an idea for this spot. And I'm not sure how our clients connected with him, but I think they were probably out in Walla Walla looking, you know, looking for land and exploring, and got connected with a farmer, and he really took the idea of the concept of having a building there that was really focused out on the amazing views of the Blue Mountains and could really make the most of this sort of slightly unusual space. And he'd been sort of reluctant in the past that anyone else use it, but it was the right fit for him. And it was sort of just one of those really kind of happy relationships that he, you know, such allowed them to build there.
Amazing meetup for them. And they became friends. And because our clients were like looking in Walla Walla at, you know,
downtown
commercial spaces. Yeah. I mean, they were kind of looking all over. And then this conversation started and this friendship kind of was struck. And yeah, I think they ended up like negotiating like a 100-year lease on the land. And, you know, they're going to be there for their lifetime and maybe the next generation.
Visitors reach Alton Wines by a winding drive that follows the curves of the existing vineyard rows, revealing the winery only gradually. But this approach didn't initially exist.
I remember talking about the site as like a blank canvas, which sounds like, oh, yeah, that's easy. But it turns out, you know, every site comes with its challenges. I mean, the thing about the blank canvas is it didn't have the road that leads out to it. It didn't have, which we ended up needing in the end, like the septic system. And we ended up needing a fire pond to service this park, because you have to be able to protect your building out in this landscape with with a separate fire pond. It did have water with the irrigation for the surrounding farmlands and vineyards. There were certain like infrastructure things that had to be done that the clients had to be willing to invest in to make it happen. But I mean, that also is the very unique thing about it. You know, from Pepperbridge Road, which is the main highway, a lot of people travel down just outside of Walla Walla. You can't see this parcel, really. You can't see the building, which we found very intriguing early on. Like a lot of the wineries there, we kind of did our precedent study around Walla Walla. We're like, what's the landscape we're working in here for other wineries? I mean, the owners were very interested in that too. Mm-hmm. That's their competitors. And one thing was like, a lot of them were kind of plopped along the highway, you know, right there. And this was like, okay, you got to go out and discover this place. It's hidden kind of in the vineyards. And turns out people love it, you know, to be kind of secluded, off the beaten path. You're secluded, whether you want to, you know, have a private event there or, you know, participate in one of their chef weekends. I mean, I think Amy mentioned that earlier. They launched for 2025, the like spring, summer into harvest, all of their kind of tasting events and private kind of chef events for the year. And it was a matter of like 10 or 15 minutes they were booked like for this upcoming season. Yeah. It's become super popular in Walla Walla, which is already a destination for wineries.
The building remains hidden until the final moments, when the architecture subtly takes over, guiding guests along a shaded arbor toward the central axis of the site. Here, the tasting room and wine garden stretch east to west, framing a breathtaking view of the Blue Mountains through a terrace that visually anchors the experience.
So we went out there to the site, walked it with the owners and actually with the farmer too. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up going for lunch and sitting down and kind of
did some sketches.
We did some initial sketches, and they really sort of had that vision embedded in them. It was obviously the views, the Blue Mountains are directly opposite the site and on the horizon.
Along with like, it's just farmland.
Just farmland.
So, and the wheat fields, like kind of changing throughout the seasons.
And then it was clear that the approach was going to be a really important thing, whether that's from the road, kind of following the wave of the natural landform. We really sort of, it was clear from the start, we understood that that was going to be part of what we were designing, that it's this kind of reveal when you get to, we were calling it the cove at that point. Yeah. So when you get to that cove and you kind of turn the last bend and you see the building. And then we had this strong idea about the axis, really the approach once you get out of your car and enter the arbor and how that frames a view all the way through the building out to the other side. So at that stage, we were really looking at those big moves of a big kind of main concept of how we could frame those views through to the landscape beyond, and how the sort of interior elements of the building would complement that. But it was pretty strong in those initial sketches, these kind of sidebars and the access and the approach, and even, yeah, kind of the eye height and sight lines, what we would do, mm-hmm. you know, on a pretty flat site to sort of emphasize those two.
Working within the budget and the unique challenges of building in a rural setting, GoSee collaborated closely with the client and a local civil engineer to successfully navigate the site planning process.
It was one of those things where it's kind of happened, I guess, maybe a little bit from the get-go with a project like this, where it's clients that they're building their business at the same time. And we have to kind of like suspend disbelief a little bit,
yeah.
and trust that they know what they're doing. And when you see a site like that, and you know, it was a fairly budget-driven project, and you see this untouched site, and in your head, you know there's going to be a ton of money from that budget, the building, that has to go into the infrastructure. And we had some moments of being like, do they understand like what this is going to be? How like you're going to have to build a road that goes around this whole landform. But to give them credit, I think they had considered all those things and understood that would have to be done in order to make a building in a special place like this, and were on board with that from the beginning. So I think in a way, the challenge was more our end to kind of really trust in the process and trust our clients that they knew kind of the extent of what they were doing on a project like this, which is a pretty big undertaking for anyone, let alone someone who's starting a business at the same time. And they really, you know, I think they kind of took it head on in terms of managing a lot of that part of it with the contractor, who they'd already sort of established a relationship with fairly quickly. I mean, they chose a builder that has done wineries in Walla Walla and the area before, was used to working in rural areas like this, and had a big commercial team that could get a road done and get infrastructure in, and it wasn't a big deal for them. And yeah. Do it a cost effective.
Credit to the clients, like Amy was saying. And we've worked with a number of clients like this over the years that really stand out. Like at every turn, they're like ready to face the challenge. I mean, we go out for a site visit, and the clients along the new road planting trees, mm-hmm. you know, out to the new structure. Like that's the kind of people
hands
they
on.
Were. They were ready to do it. So. And then we also teamed up with a really great local civil engineer to help for a lot on the side of, like, you know, details for the road that were submitted to the county, and the fire pond, and locating the septic. You know, there were a lot of things that had to, with the site planning, that had to be worked out with the civil engineer that, they were really great in that role.
Yeah.
So what they do. So. Finding that person was key to the kind of site planning as well. It wasn't all on the architectural side.
A clear structural rhythm defines the architecture. A grid of steel bays frames every element. The vine-covered arbor made of steel at the entrance, the building's enclosure, and the awning that extends to the terrace.
That's something you kind of notice, right? When you come around that end of the drive, you kind of see this exposed structural frame. It's defining the kind of south covered space where that comes right off the tasting room. But kind of broadly from afar, the building is really simple in its geometry. It's a large sheltering roof. It's extending out from the west side where the tasting room is over the east kind of wine garden. Underneath that sheltering roof is a glass box, very simple glass box. Extended off of that is the steel frame that forms that south covered deck or terrace. And that steel frame is tying through like a structural grid that's like primary structure for the building. And then it's tying through to the entry as well. So it's sort of marching out the rhythm of the structural grid to sort of greet visitors as they pull up. I mean, you can actually drive by and sort of look down the axis before even parking, kind of orient yourself. And then we tried to do some subtle things like at that really strong entry axis where this grid is kind of extruded out. Look, you're starting about 2 feet lower than where you end up. So this ramp, it's probably 60 feet long or so, is slowly rising up and bringing you up to the horizon where you kind of see across the fields and see the blue mountains. And at the same time, the treatment of that ramp is like a decomposed, compacted granite. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crunching, like creating kind of atmosphere as you're approaching the building. You know, you're entering onto this different surface. And then there's a number of things we do from there. Like that entrance is marked with a sky opening, like it's a cut in the roof where light is spilling down. And then we're sort of anchoring the tasting room at the west end with this large totem. We kind of call the chimney mass that's sort of reaching up. It's the main vertical element that's sort of balancing that horizontality of the sheltering roof.
The exterior of the structure emphasizes the earth tones of the surrounding landscape with shiplap cedar siding, matte black steel framing, and polished concrete flooring.
The main exterior kind of cladding is cedar siding, and it's a shiplap cedar siding. So it has like a little half inch reveal between each plank. We really wanted to kind of emphasize the horizontality of the exteriors in its shape and kind of visual. And then the tone of it, unlike some other projects like Minimart kind of has this white lap siding, some of our other projects have this kind of ebony stain. This one to us really wanted to be very calm in the landscape. So we tried to get like a very natural stain. It does have a stain on the cedar, but it's very like warm kind of tan tones that sort of pick up what we thought like during harvest season of the wheat fields out front would be very much in line with like the kind of cedar tones of the stain that we used on the siding. And then it's like the glass and the steel. The steel is painted with like a simple kind of matte black finish, but that steel is repeated kind of within the glazing wall. So we wanted the structure, the primary structure of the building to be repeated kind of outside. So it's all kind of the frames of the windows are black. So that's kind of where the black steel kind of comes up. I mean, that's primarily, and then it's the concrete finish on, you know, it's polished concrete floors, very smooth on your feet when you go in. And that concrete ties into the hearth on the west end. And then finally, what you see kind of on the exterior is this plaster volume. It's a cementitious plaster that really picks up the tones of the concrete. It's just a more cost-effective way to do a kind of a monolithic structure where it's not all cast-in-place concrete. Mm-hmm. Kind of has that cast-in-place concrete at the hearth level that you're experiencing. But the volume is a simple wood frame volume that's wrapped in cementitious plaster. So that's kind of the main vertical element that's kind of literally piercing through the horizontal roof shape.
Designed with the region's dry summers and crisp winters in mind, the winery reinforces connection to nature, comfort, and flexibility.
As you know, having been to Walla Walla, the climate there can be kind of at the extreme ends. Depending on the season, it gets really hot in the summer, and then there's quite a bit of snow in winter, some like strong winds that come through. And you really want to create a space that you can use as much as possible across the seasons. And part of having this very large sheltering roof was to try our best to create a cooler, shady outdoor space. We knew they'd be having events, you know, that range from small scale to large scale, and a lot of outdoor-based events. There's an outdoor sort of sunken kitchen where invited chefs come and barbecue outside, and that wine garden space, I think, has really served them well to host all manner of different large-scale events and dinners. The other kind of funny thing that we obviously couldn't see coming at all was COVID. And it opened during COVID, which was kind of amazing that we had designed all these outdoor spaces that perfectly worked for the needs of social distancing. So alongside the wine garden, the terrace directly off of the tasting room has retractable awnings, sunshades that they can take back in winter when the snow load is there, pull them out in summer and create areas of shade. The wine garden has a huge outdoor fan. We're just sort of really trying to maximize those spaces. And then kind of as John mentioned on the approach through the arbor, you arrive at this kind of orientation point, that kind of knuckle between the two sides of tasting room and the wine garden. And that space we made sure to design to be really very generous. You know, it's kind of like a entry space in some ways, but we really saw that as a spot where if you're having an event, that's kind of where you get greeted. You're probably going to be served wine from there. You're probably going to be hanging out, you know, meeting people before you go to wherever space it is for whatever event ends happening. So we made sure that it wasn't a tight entry. It was really, you know, something that became an outdoor room in itself.
There have been weddings here, and so the idea of procession, that kind of experience moving through that access, and then out to the South Lawn, which is also kind of this the big outdoor room where it's a fire pit, and I think they have
games
and stuff out there now too. So they're really utilizing all parts of the site.
A key element that deepens the winery's connection to nature is the gently raked granite path that leads into the arbor and winds through the outdoor spaces. Its subtle texture and movement evoking a sense of calm and quiet, almost meditative in its effect.
I think for us, it was one of the big ideas. We're sort of framing this view. I talked about that earlier, like this gentle rise of the ramp. It's really about kind of setting like a new intention. You're going to a new place. Like, wow, there's something different happening here. This might be a special experience that we're about to be a part of. You know, if someone's visiting the winery for the first time or a special occasion, and like material change, you know, and I think like when we photographed the project, I think it was the first time anyone had raked the kind of decomposed granite there. Like, we raked it out. I mean, we care about all those things when we do these photo shoots, but it was very kind of just sort of relaxing, kind of zen kind of thing to kind of, meditating as you rake it out. And it's something they do now, I think, for events. Yeah. They saw us doing it, and now it's something they kind of like prepare the surface, you know, that people are going to be entering on before one of their, you know, big tasting events or chef events. So there's something about that of like caring for the space. It's setting like a certain atmosphere, a certain like intention about this place that like we feel like it just like goes across the whole project, a certain care about, you know, a presentation and a feeling of a space. And the long kind of axial ramp does that from the beginning of this one.
The interior encompasses the tasting room itself, opening wide to the entrance space and to a south-facing terrace, allowing guests to choose how they engage with the landscape, indoors, outdoors, in sun or in shade.
You kind of turn and face sort of west when you're in the central courtyard space, and you enter into kind of the main bar seating area. They didn't really want like a fixed bar. They wanted kind of like a back bar. So it just felt like it's like part of the architecture almost, not a place that you would stand around. They wanted everyone to kind of feel welcome just to find a seat, whether it's inside or out on the terrace. But not someone that sort of everyone stands at and sort of faces away from the seating area, which was really interesting. I mean, I think initially in the sketches we had like a bar set up, but they were very kind of emphatic about how they wanted that set up, which we liked kind of how it turned out. And in that kind of main seating area, it's marked by this tapered skylight that's right at the center of the tasting room that you can kind of look up and through. That's lined in like a white plaster, so it really reflects a lot of light down into the space. And then when you look past that, anchoring kind of the west end is the living room, and it's just like cozy seating around the what we call kind of the totem, you know, the fireplace and chimney at the west end, really marking that end of the structure. Lots of cozy seating. I think it's like the biggest isokern fireplace that you can get. Isokern's a type of masonry fireplace that we got for this project. We even emphasized that even larger by like how the fireplace is sort of articulated with this steel, hot rolled steel panels around the fireplace with little storage for wood and kindling and books and art objects kind of around it. And then supporting that space are two bathrooms off to the north side, and spaces you might not walk through but exist also on the north side of that tasting room wall are like more service spaces, the mechanical. They've got a big prep kitchen and storage space back there, little office space. But that's mainly it on the interior. And all of that kind of looks out to the south. Everything's kind of a backing to look south across the landscape, across the fields, kind of in the immediate foreground, and then the blue mountains beyond, framed by lots of glass around the tasting room.
Many of the materials utilized in the exterior extend into the interior, where understated textures and color palettes quietly draw the eye outward, blending indoor space with the surrounding environment.
It's quite simple in a lot of ways. You know, we're trying to draw the eye out of the building, out towards the views on the south side with all the kind of glazed area. We've got polished concrete floor, you know, utilitarian in a lot of ways, but looks great. The ceilings kind of flow from inside to outside, a clear cedar, have a lot of warmth to them. So that makes that interior space feel very, kind of cozy in winter and nice and light and bright in the summer. Then there's the concrete and the steel and the plaster at the fireplace, oak cabinetry in the sort of back bar zone. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes up to emphasize the passageway. One of the things that we sort of actually was a little bit of a challenge is like the bathrooms are back there. We don't want it to be just this doorway in the middle of a wall.
Right.
And we kind of use the sort of extension of the cabinetry to kind of frame an extended doorway, so it became more of an architectural moment. Even though there's a lot of back of house back there, it doesn't look like something forgotten about.
That's really true. We fought to have kind of that articulated that way, so it'd be like a special moment as you're going to the restroom
and leaving too.
Yeah. And the clients treat it that way too. They have like a little side table and a mirror and some art there. So it's cool to see the clients kind of responding to something you kind of gestured with the architecture.
And then, you know, the rest is kind of complemented with furniture really in that space. So it's a fairly straightforward palette, but we really just want everyone to look outside.
Passive strategies such as harnessing light, creating ample shade, encouraging cross ventilation, and future-proofing the roof for solar panels helped achieve sustainability goals.
I mean, we definitely, paid attention to those large window walls and the specs of what that glazing was.
Yeah, the main kind of move that we were doing is studying the light throughout the year. And, there's not big windows to the west. There's some because there's a nice sunset that happens, on kind of that axis past the chimney. But making sure that we could provide shade and shelter when it was needed. That's the main thing out there.
Yeah, kind of definitely the more passive end of strategies for the space. There was, a planned solar array, which still might happen on the big sheltering roof over the wine garden, which would be definitely work well out in Walla Walla. So there's some kind of future-proofing that was done there.
We talked a little bit about kind of the passive strategies, the sheltering roof. We did light studies kind of for the project. Natural ventilation is handled pretty well, like on three sides of the structure for the tasting room. We have like easy access to the roof and have wired it for future solar whenever that happens. I think it's kind of a budget driven thing, but I mean, a big one too is like having this way to monitor light from the south with the retractable shades. Again, those were kind of worked into the structural grid on that south terrace.
And they were kind of, this isn't a sustainable thing, but we had those from a fairly early stage in the design as this concept of something that kind of softens the view of this building as you round the corners of the wave. And it's not this sort of harsh architectural element, but the kind of natural flow of these awnings, which kind of like wave sort of in the same form as the landscape and move with the wind, was something that we thought would be both like a memorable visual for people, but also like, kind of in the landscape creates that little softening of the architecture.
The greatest design challenge lay in distilling the master plan and determining how the site should support the structure by transforming a blank canvas into a purposeful, integrated design.
Part of it, I think, came from kind of, as we've mentioned a few times, that this is new clients, new business. There was a little bit of initial back and forth and questioning over what this building should contain. Were they going to have production facilities here? They were, in wine school, they were doing production at a off-site location where they were renting space. Mm-hmm. So we did master plans for kind of future elements of this project. At one point we had production kind of in an extended bar where the wine garden is. And even, this is even kind of built so this space could be enclosed, the wine garden, mm-hmm. if needed in the future. So there was some future proofing done there. Mm-hmm. But really making sure that the site master plan could accommodate future buildings if needed. We talked to them about using other of these small coves that are further down the waveform. So I think there was a little bit of like battling what was going to be here because they didn't really know how the business would go or how things would grow. So we eventually kind of got there and it sort of got simplified and it kind of worked out in our favor, I think, with the simplicity of the structure in the building to make it what it is now.
I remember another design challenge, like early on, we kind of mentioned the blank canvas site and just being like sort of struck by that. Like there's nothing to kind of like nudge up against like and respond to really, because yeah. It's just this cove and there's no, you know, large fir tree here or really like a setback or a building there.
Where does this go?
And so that was a challenge early on. And we even started it with that lunch we had with the clients where we were sketching out like, you know, forms. Is the building broken into two? Is it one single? Is it oriented east, west, you know? And I think we solved that by just constantly kind of creating the experience of like driving up to it, walking through it,
giving like enough space.
Remember we did like sketches. I don't, Sherry, you may have these, like these sort of vignettes of like what one would see, almost like a frame from, you know, from a film
sequence,
of like arrival, you know, how you would experience it, like in a series of quick sketches. And that was us kind of thinking through what is it like to arrive at this place, to be in it. So that was an interesting thing to try to solve, like this new building in a pretty open, blank kind of landscape. Lots of cool things to look at, but not a lot to kind of like inform what would be there. So it really was digging into that kind of experiential nature of it and then the program, like Amy mentioned, with clients.
For this project, GoSee partnered with a new contractor, an experience that can be uncertain. But the collaboration proved highly successful, with the team executing the design with precision and completing the work in record time.
We'd obviously, you know, met the builder and run through the project with them, but it was definitely his operation was a different scale, I guess, than what we've maybe used to working with on our residential projects. And he'd done a lot of wineries, but they weren't necessarily the sort of level of detail or style of this project. So we didn't know exactly how that would pan out necessarily. There's some unknowns there.
Yeah.
But it ended up being great. Like I don't know if it's just because of that type of operation. It's you can't, they build what you give them.
Yeah.
And they ask questions when they need answers, but they're not kind of just going cowboy on you and doing whatever they want. They really built what we drew. And we were pretty impressed with the efficiency and the speed of the project. And it started right before COVID. And they were done in like 8 months or something. That's crazy. True. It was
very
one impressive. Of our fastest projects.
Testament to them, Mountain States Construction. And yeah, I know Amy said, we were a little nervous at first. You always are. Someone you haven't worked with before. We hadn't built anything with them. And I remember one of the first conversations with the site supervisor when they're on site. Is running through the plans, particularly the concrete plan, and asking a series of questions. And I got off the phone after like a 20-minute call with him. I was like, this is going to be good, because he was asking all the right things, very detailed, going through all the like top of concrete elevations everywhere. So I was like, this is going to be great. I mean, that's what you want, you know, just someone that's, especially the site supervisor, such an important role. Mm-hmm. That person's there. They're a big part of your team, you know, to realize this, and someone that's going to communicate effectively and get into the details. And I mean, yeah, we were super impressed at every turn with those guys.
One of the most valuable lessons from the project was learning to balance the creative vision with flexibility during construction, adapting to practical and budgetary constraints without compromising the integrity of the design.
Sometimes, like the longer we've been working and doing projects and working with different clients and budgets and whatnot, I think there's a danger that you can get a little bit like bogged down with those known elements, kind of like we're talking about with the infrastructure and costs and like whether something is really doable. And that can sometimes take away from dreaming and like concept and kind of really being truly creative on a project. And sometimes you've just got to take that leap and trust that, you know, to an extent that you can make this project happen, or at least keep the essence of those big concept moves on a project that you kind of are so excited about at the beginning and take them all the way through, and not kind of constrain or harness yourself from the beginning because of your expectations of, oh, this might not align exactly with the budget. I mean, obviously we've all got to think about budget at a certain point, but you know, allow yourself to kind of have that creative mode at the beginning, and because it can lead to really amazing things, and clients can surprise you and contractors can surprise you. And I feel like you got to have that strength at the beginning of a project to really let it sing and have its essence, that even if it shifts and budget constraints come in, that's what sticks throughout. Mm-hmm. I think. And these guys, like, yeah, we did have questions at the beginning, like, are they really going to build a winery? Yeah. We kept having to be like, yeah, they're going to do it. This is going to happen.
It may not be unique to this project, but it's still a great lesson, like, especially during the construction phase, to be flexible about your approach to like how you're going to manage this, how you're going to like meet expectations for what the project needs and wants to be and what the clients are after. You know, you mentioned kind of like rural settings, contractors, you know, a lot of times they're managing multiple jobs, they're in their truck, you know, bouncing around, and like, how are you going to communicate with them effectively? And so we talk about that a lot, like setting up those kind of parameters early in the construction, like, okay, we're going to meet Tuesday, you know, via phone. We're going to talk through all the questions that you have for the upcoming week, just kind of setting what fits, you know, this particular contractor. If it is like a weekly 20-minute phone call and that's all that the budget allows, or the contractor can, you know, just make sure that, like, I think just like talking on the phone, you can cover so much, you know, with contractors. Sometimes in remote settings, like, they don't want to see an email, like, yeah, you know, every morning from you. You know, they might just want to talk through some issues. So I think being flexible through the construction is such a key one for our work. And I mean, just the way we work, we want to be known for that. Like, we can come up with creative solutions and still be flexible and easier to work with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not combative with, like, mm-hmm. yeah, our builders. Definitely. And they really are our bullpen, our team, yeah, that is making it happen.
Yeah, we're not going to live or die over a certain detail necessarily.
And right.
It's everyone has kind of a limit, but we really want to be flexible and, yeah, collaborative to make the project the best it can be, rather than us dictating, you must do something this way, when we might not, you know, be the ones to do that.
And maybe that it is the right way to do it, but at least we've like talked through, okay, right, this is their side, exactly, of it, this is what we see, and usually we can find the right answer that, yeah, way.
Alton Wine's architecture invites wine enthusiasts to enjoy a unique setting both indoors and out. Striking a view of the Blue Mountains and drawing the surrounding landscape into sharp, immediate focus. Rather than dominate the land, Alton Wines becomes a lens through which to experience it more deeply. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious to hear what insights Amy and John might offer to someone preparing to take on a rural project. Lessons learned that could help others navigate the journey with greater confidence and foresight.
We talk about this a lot on projects, is being really clear, concise, consistent with the drawings, the construction documents, and the specifications. Imagine you didn't have any construction administration. You just get the pass these drawings and specs off. Like, they're going to build what, you know, what you've detailed, what you've specified. Like, make sure it's very clear in your communication. And yeah. And potentially like a broader move is like, for a project like this, maybe you're not as involved on the day-to-day kind of oversight. from an architectural standpoint, simplifying the complexity of how the pieces tectonically go together, like how it's assembled on site as much as you can.
I think we've definitely learned on some of these projects where the builders maybe not so familiar with the type of work that we design and build, that you've really got to be careful not to make assumptions about how they might interpret something you've drawn, or how they might build it, or how the people that they work with might build it, because more often than not, they might just do what they want. So
having
early conversations about those key details, the key assemblies, even just making sure that how that roof is going to be built, just because they see it on paper does not mean that their roof is going to do it like that.
So
I think we've learned that, getting on the same page. And if they're going to do something different, how can we accommodate that? Does it make sense? Can we adapt? So,
one other, I didn't jot this down earlier, but I was just thinking, and we tell our staff this, I mean, just about every, maybe I can say every project is in Revit now. We have it modeled, like include a little snapshot on those construction documents where you're doing details, the window wall or the thresholds, like, or the cabinetry. Like so often now we're including 3D kind of snapshots right on that same page so that builders, subcontractors can quickly look there. Then, I understand what they're after here. Then go into the details.
Yeah.
Which we're finding more and more to be like a really successful way to communicate in the documents.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Amy and John. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires a mark that you want to leave on this world.
Maybe this is a small impact, but I think it's one you can't really quantify as much, but we've got a new studio space. It's probably twice as big as our last one. We built it out. We tried to create like a very kind of just inspiring space for us and the staff, like our team to be in. And I think we've talked about this recently, and maybe architecture offices sometimes can feel stuffy or like, I don't know.
Yeah.
We want to create the opposite of that, like a relaxing space where everyone feels comfortable about sharing ideas, laughing, you know, not taking yourself too seriously, but taking the work seriously kind of thing. And the impact being, as I look back on some offices that I've worked at previously fondly and have been inspired by, it makes a big difference in one's trajectory and like career.
Yeah.
If you have that experience and you know, maybe some of our team members create their own offices one day and like they think back about their experience here in like a really positive light. I think that's really important. Like they have to spend, and we have to spend so much time with each other, and we're here a lot, you know, like make it like a good experience. We're trying to do that more and more with the space and like how we operate, like with project critiques and, you know, everything, like our lunch meetings where we all sit down around the same big table together and share ideas from the weekend or travels. So like we're creating that kind of atmosphere is really important to us.
Like we were saying, you know, the course of a career as an architect, especially in a small office, there's only so many buildings that, you know, get built, and the scale of them and the types of clients like ranges pretty wildly. And I think we've always been very conscious, and hope it, you know, is apparent that even our small projects can be something special, whether that's a moment or a detail within those, even if it's like a little kitchen remodel, that there's something special to that thing that you're working in every day or touching every day. Or it's these much larger projects where you can have a big impact from, you know, far away, like Alton Wines, that we really put our all into each of those projects. And it's not, oh, this is a small project, it's not got a lot of budget, we're not going to be able to do anything interesting, let's just get it done kind of thing. That we try and find those moments where we can and, give everything that same level of attention. And hopefully that has an impact on the clients and the people that go into those spaces and see them as thoughtful pieces of architecture. So.
To add to that, like you've been to a wedding at Core Cellars, right? Didn't you go to a wedding there?
I officiated a wedding.
You officiated a wedding there.
Yeah.
And then we also had some friends that got married at Alton Wines.
Yeah. But that is, yeah, pretty amazing. Getting to officiate a wedding
out of space.
For a close friend at a space that you designed, I think is something that is pretty memorable.
I mean, that's really cool. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.